Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahat ben Levi Vidatan va'aviram b'nei Eliyav va'on ben Pelet b'nei Reuven.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host Phil Chernofsky and this show is for Parshat Korach. Recording and first broadcast Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the first day of the month of Tammuz 5772, but that would be the second day of Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. For those who are not familiar, I will explain again that when there is a 30-day month, let's go back one step, Jewish months are either 29 days or 30 days long. This is because it takes the moon to go through its cycle of phases a little over 29 and a half days. So a month will either be 29, which is called a short month, or defective, or 30 days, which is called a full month, and when there is a 30-day month, as Sivan is, there will be 2 days Rosh Chodesh, the 30th day of Sivan, which was yesterday, and the first day of Tammuz, which is today, Thursday, the 21st of June. Clear? If not clear, let me know. Otherwise, we proceed. Shabbat is the third day of Tammuz. I want to speak about that a little bit later. But first, because today is Rosh Chodesh and we don't say Tachanun, we will say Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph Psalm 121. Shir la ma'alot, esa einai el heharim me'ayin yavo ezri. Ezri me'im Adonai osei shamayim va'aretz. Al yitain lamot raglecha, Al yanum shomerecha, hine lo yanum velo yishan shomer Yisrael. Adonai shomerecha, Adonai tzilecha al yad yaminecha. Yomam hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'yad olam. Achinu kol beit Yisrael, hanatunim batzara uvashivya. Ha'omidim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela l'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. Before we get into Parshat Korach, let's hear Shloimi Dax from an album called Avinu, with a song called Yehi HaChodesh. It's a really from the Motzoi Shabbat Zmirot, but it's about blessing the good month, which has just started, blessing the month for good. And we will hope that the month starts out well and that the ending becomes a happy ending. I will talk later about the month of Tammuz, which we are just beginning today. But in the meantime, Shloimi Dax with Yehi HaChodesh.
Mahalei Mishalo Yisrei Nu
Parshat Korach is kind of depressing. I don't really know how to say it differently from that. We had last week the episode of the sin of the spies. Not only was it a major problem in that generation of the wilderness, but it was, as God's statement, the tenth time that the people had tested His patience, so to speak. It was a culmination of sorts of a whole series of bothersome things, maybe beginning with and certainly including Chet Ha'egel, the sin of the golden calf, and lots of little things between the two events. We're talking only about little more than a year out of Egypt, and the sin of the spies, which was last week's theme, is bad enough. Now, God had it, so to speak, with the people. When the number 10 is used, it is not thought of as 10 individual items, but it's seen as a complete unit, which fits very much our mathematical notion of our own decimal numbering system. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 all have symbols known as numerals or digits. And 10 does not have a symbol on its own. 10 is represented as one group of 10 and no additional units. It's a completeness. And that's why the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, which happens to be this week's Mishnah, speaks of the 10 statements that brought the world into existence, and the 10 generations from Adam to Noah, and the 10 generations from Noah to Abraham, and the 10 miracles that occurred in the Beit HaMikdash, and the 10 items that were created on that first instant, the last instant, right before God rested on the first Shabbat of Bereshit, and a whole bunch of other 10s, and they always carry with it not the focus on the exact number, although there are lists, but rather on a completeness. And included in that, in Pirkei Avot, and mentioned in last week's Torah reading, is the 10 times that we had irritated God. Again, I say so to speak. And that was Chet HaMeraglim. The result of that was a decree against the entire adult male population of that generation that they would wander in the Midbar and die out, and only their children would enter the land of Israel. Bad, bad enough. And now, the mood is for more, and you have Korach. Korach, a cousin, first cousin of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Torah starts, as we read in the beginning of the show, Vayikach Korach, Korach took. He was the son of Yitzhar, the grandson of Kehat, the great-grandson of Levi. He and Datan v'Aviram, Bnei Eliav, and On ben Pelet, the two of whom, or the three of whom, Datan, Aviram, and On, were Bnei Reuven. And they stand before Moshe and all the people of Israel, with 250 allies, we'll call them at the moment, men, prominent men, and they gather to oppose Moshe Rabbeinu, and they challenge his authority. I don't know how much of the detail we need to go into now. I'll just give a little background as to why Korach was in that mood for rebellion. Korach was the son of Yitzhar. Yitzhar was the second son of Kehat. The first son of Kehat was Amram. Amram was the father of Aharon HaKohen and of Moshe Rabbeinu. Korach, cousin of Aharon and Moshe, felt that it was not appropriate and not fair that his uncle Amram should have two sons who take over the leadership position of the people, and not him. Furthermore, a younger cousin, the son of a younger brother of his father, was given the authority over the family of Kehat, and Korach felt slighted again. There are various and other sundry other reasons that are given for his rebellion, but we'll say it was ripe for him to challenge the authority of Moshe. By doing so, he was challenging the authority of God, and what he tried to present to the people was that these were decisions of Moshe as a person, not as Moshe a servant of God and a messenger of God. So it's difficult for Korach to get up and say God is not fair by appointing Aharon as Kohen Gadol, but he could point the finger at Moshe and say Moshe is not fair for appointing his own brother and stir up the discontent that way. He found a kindred spirit in people from the tribe of Reuven. Reuven as the firstborn of Yaakov, the Reuven, as the Torah says repeatedly, is Bechor Yisrael, the firstborn of Israel, was nonetheless bypassed when it came to the leadership of the Jewish people, that went to the tribe of Yehuda. He was bypassed when it came to the sacred roles of leadership, that of the Kohen and the Levi. That was given not to Reuven, but to Levi's descendants. And he was bypassed by the traditional double portion of inheritance given to a Bechor, because Yosef, Yaakov's favorite son, we'll say, the son of Rachel, his original first love, which means three very significant roles in the community, in the nation. Reuven was bypassed, and it was easy for Korach to convince the people of Reuven to join him in his challenge of the authority of Moshe. Torah proceeds to describe the confrontation, and the ultimate result was the death or the removal of Korach and Datan and Aviram and their gang, and the 250 Ketoret offerers were killed by a divine fire, and the people, the rest of the people, were very, very struck by that and complained that Moshe was killing off the people of God. And it was a very sad kind of thing, because Moshe fought to protect the majority of the people. He said, "Ha'ish echad yechta," one person sins, and you're going to take it out on everybody. And thereby he saved the overwhelming majority of the nation. But the people's perception was based on the earth swallowing up Datan and Aviram and their families and possessions, the being struck dead of the 250 Ketoret offerers, and they said, "Why are you killing God's nation?" It's a very much of a downer, especially following all the other problems. And it's not easy to explain away. Korach felt justified, the people who joined him felt justified, and they were just wrong, dead wrong. Now I want to not change the subject, but I want to bring something else into the equation. There are mitzvot in the Torah, out of the 613, that come at you from a verse, and they have no context from which they come. Thou shalt not wear wool and linen together, that's called shatnez, is a mitzvah that's not connected to a story, it's just there. Non-contextual mitzvah. Do not muzzle an animal when it works for food, on food. When brothers live together and one of them dies and they have no offspring, the mitzvah of Yibum, the secondary mitzvah of Chalitza. These are mitzvot that are presented by the Torah, not in the context of a story. And then there are mitzvot that are presented very much contextually. The original presentation of circumcision was from within the story of God's relationship with Avraham Avinu. All of the rules of Korban Pesach, Matzah, and Chometz are presented within the story of the Exodus. So much so that you need the oral law to help us distinguish between what features of the description of that night of the Exodus were part of the rules of Korban Pesach in perpetuity, and which were one-shot deals just for that night. And you can't really tell them without a scorecard, and that scorecard is presented by the oral law, by the Torah Sheba'al Peh. So that's the other kind of mitzvah, contextual. We have yet a third kind, at least in the way that I'm looking at them. And we had examples of that in Shlach, and I don't remember if I had a chance to explore that. I don't think I did. So I want to explore it a little bit in Parshat Korach, because it happens again. The big bulk of the Torah portion of Korach is about Korach's rebellion and the punishments and the aftermath and the miracle of the rods of each tribe with the names of the tribes written on them were placed overnight into the Mishkan, and the following morning it was seen that the rod, the stick of Aharon for the family of Levi, for the tribe of Levi, had burst forth with flowers and almond fruits, nuts, and that was a message that God was the one who chose Aharon, and he was the one who told Moshe what to do, and Korach can go soak his head. Pardon the expression. Then you have the smaller portion of the rest of the Sedra, which you really can't say has nothing to do with the story, because it has everything to do with the story. What I'm saying is that there are 9 mitzvot in Parshat Korach, all at the latter part of the Parsha, after the whole story of Korach is completed, seemingly, although I really shouldn't say it like that because this one is so obvious, having nothing to do with Korach, sure, has plenty to do with Korach. But these are mitzvot that are part of Torah Misinai, God's revelation of all of the content of the Torah to Moshe in the 40 days and 40 nights that followed the Sinai experience of the people. And what you have is mitzvot that could have been presented anywhere else in the Torah, but they are presented here in Parshat Korach to put a serious note and a contemporary note to the whole story of Korach. Hold that thought for a moment. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio. You are listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Korach, and I was just in the middle of explaining how I see, picture, portray the mitzvot that accompany the story of Korach, not as part of the story, but not as disjointed as those non-contextual mitzvot. Obviously, they relate to the episode of Korach, because they all deal with Kohen, Levi, authority. You have, for example, the mitzvah of a Levi doing shmirah, guard duty, honor guard duty, on the Temple Mount. You have the prohibition of him shirking that responsibility. You have a prohibition of a Levi doing a Kohen's job, or a Kohen doing a Levi's job. You have the prohibition of a non-Kohen or Levi doing any of those jobs that are designated for the Kohen and the Levi. You have the gift to the Kohen of the redemption money of a firstborn. You have the gift of Maaser, a tithe to the Levi, his requirement to give a tenth of a tenth to the Kohen, called Trumat Maaser, or Maaser Min HaMaaser. And you get that feeling that there are those mitzvot which perpetuate the story of Korach, that derive from the story of Korach. I want to make it clear they don't actually derive from the story. They predate the story. They are part of Torah from Sinai. But the way the Torah presents mitzvot to us is significant. And this is something that I think about a lot. There is a body of mitzvot. God chose when to say a particular thing, when a mitzvah will occur, giving it a background, giving it a juxtaposition, in order to make a point. It all could have been done as a presentation of a book of mitzvot, and no context. But that's not the way it is, and that's not the way God wants it to be. Now, what I'm going to say might sharpen it or might weaken it. I think it sharpens at the point. Not all the gifts to the Kohen are mentioned in this parsha. But Pidyon HaBen is redemption of the firstborn. So you see here, A, that originally the firstborns were supposed to be the functionaries in the temple. And that was changed, we already had that earlier in the book, to the Kohen and the Levi. So by choosing one of the 24 gifts of the Kohen, the Pidyon HaBen one, is the one that serves as a reminder to the Korachs of the world who say, I want to do that, why should he do that? Because that's the way it happens. That's what God said. And here is a mitzvah, which is a perpetual reminder of the transition of the Bechor, the firstborn of the family, to the Kohen. And several other things. The interplay of Levi and Kohen, that they can't do each other's jobs, that Levi has a responsibility to the Kohen of Trumat Maaser, that we have a responsibility to the Levi. That sort of parallels or echoes in a mitzvah way what Moshe said already to Korach in the original story of why are you taking more, why do you want to take more to yourself? You already have a special status, and that's the way it's supposed to be. Maybe even one little detail of Pidyon HaBen helps make the point. If, first of all, a Bechor Peter Rechem Imo means the baby boy that opened the mother's womb. He is a Bechor for the purpose of Pidyon HaBen. If father or mother descend from Kohen or Levi, another way of putting that is if either grandfather, paternal grandfather, maternal grandfather, is a Kohen or a Levi, then the child does not require a Pidyon HaBen. Now, if you think about it logically, the Kohen Bechor never had a switch. He was a Bechor, he's a Kohen, and he was a continuous candidate for functionary in the temple, either as a Bechor or if that got switched to a Kohen. So he never underwent that symbolic exchange and redemption the first time. And he is not in the category of Pidyon HaBen, because Pidyon HaBen represents the changing of the personalities of the functionaries in the temple. But a baby whose mother is a Bat Kohen, that really wouldn't be there. That's not the same. Because this baby is a Yisrael, he's not a Kohen, and yet any connection of this sort to the tribe of Levi, either grandfather, maternal, paternal or maternal, is a Kohen or a Levi, there is no Pidyon HaBen for the child. This is a detail which emphasizes the point that it is particularly appropriate to be presented to us in the context, not the context, but in juxtaposition of or to the story of Korach and his rebellion, because it's tied in with that. I hope that got across. I think I felt it wasn't as well expressed as it could have been, but I hope you got the point. Another blunt way of putting what I've been trying to say is that by telling a story in the majority of the parsha, of the Sedra, you're talking about once upon a time, a long time ago, more than 3,000 years, something happened. So the story has its morals and its messages, but it is still removed from us by a very long period of time. By then presenting mitzvot, which are in perpetuity, which means they are there to this day and will continue to be there, whether or not any particular ones are temporarily in suspension because of no Beit HaMikdash, not the point. These mitzvot are there forever, and some of them continue to this very day and beyond. That brings this story right up to contemporary times. You can say, look what happened to Korach, look what happened to Datan and Aviram so long ago, but the punishment for violating some of these mitzvot and crossing the line for a non-Kohen to do certain Kohen things is a death penalty from heaven. You could die. You could die today. That's a lot more powerful than just once upon a time, a long time ago. And we've had this in Shlach, and we have it in Korach. And I would say these are the two Sedras that have it most clearly presented in that fashion. I want to change the subject now, but there is a transition, because the subject will be miracles and nature. And we have in the Parsha, as well as the Haftorah, or in the Haftorah as well as the Parsha, we have miracle within nature, not as part of nature, as a departure from nature. But we have Moshe Rabbeinu saying to God, if these people shall die the way other people have died up until now, then you didn't tell me to do all of these things. But if there will be a new kind of death for these people, that will be a sign that you, God, sent me, and I was not acting on my own in any of the things that I did. And that's when the earth opened its mouth and swallowed Datan and Aviram and family and possessions whole. And even though people think of that in terms of earthquake, it was not your normal everyday 6.2, 8.4, whatever on the Richter scale. It was a different kind of earth opening and swallowing, which was a miraculous kind of thing. In the Haftorah, Shmuel HaNavi is having a problem with his people, and he calls upon God to bring about a freak storm of a certain type that would show the people that he is being directed by God as to what to do and not acting on his own. Now we get to something else, not the Sedra, but the calendar. There is reference in Sefer HaTodah, the Book of Our Heritage by Eliyahu Kitov, that the third day of Tammuz, which is this Shabbat, is the date that Shemesh Begivon Dom occurred. The Book of Yehoshua tells us that Yehoshua was in battle, and he asked God to perform a miracle that the sun and the moon should stand still, whatever that means, that the day shall prolong, so they're able to complete their battle, since nighttime warfare was not in the picture in those days. I'm not asking anyone to accept specific definitions of Shemesh Begivon Dom. That the sun should stand still, what does that mean from a physics point of view? If the sun stands still, if the earth stands still, if it stops rotating, if it stops revolving, then gravity takes over and we get sucked in and burned up. We're talking about a miracle. A miracle that the Navi testifies was unprecedented, that there should be this kind of miracle in response to a person's instructions. Yahushua really surprises us when he asks God for this kind of miracle. Third of Tammuz. Today is the first. Friday is the second. This Shabbat is the third of Tammuz. So you have a picture in your mind, and you could understand it any way you like, of a miracle occurring, a day lengthening, time suspended, sun remains shining longer than it would normally in order for the battle to continue. But that triggers in one's mind all the other times, or should trigger in one's mind, all the other times when the sun and the moon do not deviate from their natural assignment. Bear with me, I'm taking a little too long to get into this, but maybe this will work. This Motzoi Shabbat, this Saturday night, the eve of the fourth of Tammuz, according to Minhag Yerushalayim, based on the teachings of the Vilna Gaon, is the first opportunity this month for Kiddush Livana. Kiddush Livana is a blessing that is recited outdoors under the sky with a moon visible, unobstructed by clouds, according to Minhag Yerushalayim, from 3 full days following the Molad, the moment of the new moon, 3 full days in the evening, we start saying Kiddush Livana. Many people wait for 7 full days, which would be this coming Tuesday night. One way or the other, this is a monthly mitzvah to recite this blessing. Blessed are you, Hashem, our God, King of the universe, who by his word created the heavens, and by his breath all their host. He set for them laws and times, so that they should not deviate from their appointed task. He set for them laws and times that they should not deviate from their appointed tasks. Every morning, right on schedule, the sun rises in the east. It has not yet been anyone's experience that on a particular morning it should not do that. The timing from day to day varies, but that timing follows the laws and the rules of nature, and can be predicted with split-second accuracy. The phases of the moon, so too. The sun and the moon, as this blessing continues, they are joyous and glad to perform the will of their owner. Capital O, the worker, capital W, of truth, whose work is truth. This is a personification of the sun and the moon. We don't really believe that the sun and the moon are thrilled and delighted to do God's bidding. That's how they were created. That's the laws of nature that govern them. We look to them, and by personifying them, we say, we people, on the other hand, who also have laws that we are supposed to follow, and appointed tasks have the free will to choose to comply or not. And when we comply, it should be with joy and delight in doing God's bidding. It is sort of a pointless thing to leave the joy of performing God's will to the son who has no choice, which has no choice, or the moon. But when we are inspired on a poetic level to picture the heavenly bodies following God's rules and being happy to do so, as demonstrated by their non-deviation, then that is supposed to inspire us to do our mitzvot, our tasks, and follow our laws with the joy that we place in our thinking on the sun and the moon. It's that kind of reminder. But let's go back to the point of Shemesh Begivon Dom V'Yoreach Be'emek Ayalon. The sun and the moon generally do not deviate from the laws of nature. We believe in miracles, and we believe that there was a miracle in the time of Joshua where he requested/demanded of God a miracle that would deviate from the laws of creation, which God obviously has the authority and the power to do. So it happened. So we're associating it with the third of Tevet. So it is now part of our thinking and pondering this Shabbat. But what are we going to see this Shabbat? Friday night, we will see an early, thin crescent moon, and we will not yet say Kiddush Levana, even though Friday night is early enough, is late enough to do it, more than 3 days since the Molad, which was Tuesday morning, because we don't do it on Shabbat. But if you see the moon on Friday night on your way home from shul, then it should trigger in your mind the date, 3rd of Tevet, way back in the time of Yehoshua, a miracle happened, and the moon and the sun stood still. This, I am suggesting, has an effect to say, you, this moon that I'm looking at now, are not standing still. You are going about your rotation around the earth, which will take, from our perspective, 29 and a half days plus. It actually takes 27 and a half days, and 2 days are added because of the motion of the moon and the sun, the moon and the earth around the sun. And the sun spins on its own axis, and the sun moves in space along with us, and we revolve around it. And all of these things we see not as, well, that was a miracle and this is nothing. No, that was a miracle which violated the laws of nature. This is the miracle of every day that follows the laws of nature. Only less miraculous in the sense of more predictable, but really no less miraculous. I am a big fan of seeing miracles and nature hold hands with each other. They are intimately related. They are not two separate things. Only the frequency and the timing makes them different. But in essence, they are following God's command. God says objects fall down because of gravity, which he created. And he could say, if the need came, that in this particular case, objects shall not follow the laws of gravity and shall rise instead of fall when you let them go. hand in hand. Rabbi Dr. Natan Lopez Cardozo used to speak on this topic, probably still does, and he called it the nature of miracle and the miracle of nature, and I love that title, and I believe in it, and pondering of miracles should result in our pondering of nature, and pondering of nature should result in our pondering of miracles. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Chodesh Tov, Lehishtameach.